small comments on the three readings, especially the second one. The book of Deuteronomy, the word Deuteronomy is itself a Greek word which means the second law. And the book itself is this massive collection, one of the more boring books in the Hebrew Bible. It's law after law after law after law after law. But the theology of Deuteronomy is as follows. If you are faithful to God, observing the law, then God's going to give you sort of a pain-free ride through life. Sounds suspiciously like the prosperity gospel that we hear so often from televangelists today. But you'll notice that in later Jewish thought, that theology was totally upended. Destroyed, is it? Truly, by the book of Job. Remember, Job was this faithful guy who had all these problems. And the point of the book says, you can't make that nice, neat moral calculus. I will behave this way, and God will do this for me. It doesn't work that way. The gospel is, again, an instance of what I've come more and more to see as a hallmark of Jesus' vision of the world. His clear-sightedness, you know, somehow. His vision of the world was not obscured by a whole bunch of junk. Human traditions, as it's called here. But rather, he was able to see, no, it's not all this. You don't do all this stuff to prove yourself religious. It is conversion of the heart. It's radical transformation of one's heart that is important. That's what service of God means. But I want to concentrate particularly on this lovely passage from the letter of James. It follows hard on that notorious passage from the letter to the Ephesians that was read last Sunday, which famously said, wives, be subject to your husbands as you are to the Lord, for the husband is the head of the wife, blah, 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 blah. Okay, I made the point last week that Paul didn't write that. It's a general consensus of scholars that the letter to the Ephesians, together with 2 Thessalonians, Colossians, pastoral letter to Timothy and Titus. In other words, those letters had the most harsh suppression of the role of women, are not Pauline. In fact, they represent a retrenchment of Paul's view of the place of women in the church. The lodestone of this, of course, is the letter to the Galatians, which Paul certainly did write, in which he said there's neither slave, free, male, female, Greek, barbarian. In other words, these massive social divisions, these oppositions, this maldistribution of power. But rather, Paul, following on the example of Jesus, treated women as his equals. And that's why I called him, I think properly last Sunday, Jesus was a social misfit. Jesus did not work into the patriarchal society of the Roman Empire, the first century Judaism. Why? Precisely because he recognized women as his co-human beings. One thing I didn't mention last week is this, that Jesus was understood by his contemporaries as a prophet, that great category of Jewish men and women whose main focus was on social inequities. That is the heart of all of the prophets' message. Read Isaiah, read Jeremiah, read Amos. That's the thing that animated them. That's the social dysfunction that they addressed in all their writing. Here comes Jesus behaving just like one of those renegades. And Paul, in becoming a follower of Jesus, taking on Jesus' form of Judaism, had the same kind of conversion experience. Now they're neither male nor female. So it is a prophetic role. It's not only as individuals are we to fill, but as institutions too. To say to the world that sexism is sinful. this inequity between men and women, expressed however, is evil and sinful. And it should be clear to everybody in this room that we hardly caught up with Jesus or Paul in this regard. We're still lagging behind, quite far behind at times. And James puts it very nicely. He talks about true religion. You notice he does add sex to his list, huh? He says, religion that is pure and undefiled before God is to care for orphans and widows in their distress and to keep oneself unstained by the world. What's the world? The world is that area where women are repressed. And why widows? Because in first century Judaism, widows were basically, literally, non-persons. They did not exist. Their reality was totally derived from their connection with a husband. And if they didn't have a husband, of course, they vanished as human beings. Please note, so this is what pure religion is, to recognize the co-humanity of everybody. And of course, kids, until the 19th century, even in Europe, were considered non-persons. That's people like Charles Dickens and a few other social reform-minded people. Kids took on their full humanity, in our view. So it's enormously important that we recognize this, that we recognize the inequities in our world. Everybody knows, of course, that female fetuses are aborted much, much more frequently in multiple places in the world than male fetuses. Now that we can ultrasound a pregnant lady and find out the gender. Read the statistics in India, China. How many female fetuses are aborted? And I'm not talking about the morality of abortion. That's a separate thing. I'm talking about the sexism that's engendered in, manifested in that view of human life. So, pure religion, to confer the reality of their own personhood on these non-persons, women, children. The prophetic voice that throughout the history of the church continues to be suppressed, still very often frightening. It is the voice we desperately need to hear and follow.